And there's a microphone in the center of the room. My question is, how do you respond to the argument that a voucher system would have the effect of increasing government control over private schools?
If you read our initiative, one of the biggest criticisms we get is that they say, you know, if you enact this initiative, you can never change it because we took a special pains. It takes a 4/5 requirement, a vote of the legislature, not 2/3, 4/5 of the legislature to change this initiative. We have taken, I believe, and our lawyers and advisors all believe, the opportunity to make sure that this does not in any way increase the regulation on private schools. It would be a sad state of affairs if, in fact, the result of this was to turn the private schools into what are now the public schools. I assure you, if you read the initiative, you'll feel very comfortable that we've addressed that issue.
I'm John Cooper with Floridians for Educational Choice, and our campaign in Florida, I'm proud to say, is co-chaired by Jeb Bush. I have a question. The way you described the existing status quo of the school system, don't think I heard you use the word monopoly. Did you deliberately avoid using that word in your description?
It is worse than a monopoly.
But you don't have a problem with using the word?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. Not at all. Yes.
Gene Meyer with the Federalist Society. I had a question. You said we'd be surprised where businesses' contributions go, and probably some of us are, maybe others aren't. But my question is, what do you have any practical suggestions of ways in which we can help cause businesses to change where their contributions go, or any ideas as to what to do about that, which is a very serious problem?
I honestly don't have a solution other than I know many of you write on issues. I know many of you communicate, but I think it's a matter of communicating to people, to CEOs and others, to at least ask them to review where their contributions are going and assure themselves that that's where they really want them to go. Unfortunately, a number of CEOs I've talked to don't even have the foggiest idea where a lot of their contributions go. And they're made at levels in the organization where people maybe are not considering all of the factors related to making that contribution. But I honestly don't have a quick sort of what we get. It's an educational question, I think. And I think it's one of making sure that CEOs are aware of where their contributions go.
Raphael Kasman, member of the Philadelphia Society, emeritus professor of civil engineering. I have a slightly philosophical question for you. The public school system is supported by taxes. Actually, it's a kind of an entitlement made by people who have either no children, have had children, or are uninterested in the school system, a willy-nilly contribution. So basically, if you look at it carefully, it's a form of theft. So therefore, no matter what you do with the school system, you're on very shaky ground, because the people who are actually, you might say, profiting from the thing, are relying on force to get their money. Now, no matter, voucher system sounds good. Supposing that there's an inflation, the voucher system, what, has to increase. Taxes have to increase. In other words, it's still a coercive system. The only way you can, in the long run, improve the situation is to abolish the public funding of education, not abolish the education of the public. And I was just wondering, I can see that as an interim step, you might argue that the voucher system is the way to go. But in the final analysis, over a period of time, I think you'll find that it's on feet of clay. It's based on coercion, which you oppose as much as I do. And the way to do it is to abolish the public funding of education. And now they're going to tell you, of course, that education is going to be destroyed. Well, it wasn't destroyed. The country had non-publicly funded education for the first 120 years or 130 years of its existence. How would you respond to this?
Well, you know, I've learned a lot about politics in the last year and a half since we've tried to get this issue qualified. And Ed Meese would advise on the art of the possible. And clearly, I believe that if we could move toward putting a voucher, which would be 50% of that illegal taxation, as you describe it, back into the decision-making power of the parent, we will have come one tremendous way. And so that's really what we're attempting to do. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm Ben Alexander. I just finished a term with the Secretary of Education, and I asked this question of Bill Bennett this morning. And I'd like to hear from the grassroots level, from someone as eloquent as you, with the Bush America 2000 program, which you hear a lot about, as well as the Bush Initiative for New American Schools, which is an attempt to create, quote, break the mold schools in every congressional district in this country. From your perspective, has this been helpful in California, the current administration educational policy, or how do you look at this?
I think it's been helpful in the sense that it brings focus and publicity to the issue. But it suffers, in my opinion, from what I call the fixed recipe. We're not dealing with a static situation. We're dealing with a very, very fluid situation. As a matter of fact, at any point in time, the problems in the inner city in Los Angeles with regard to education may be very, very different than the problems in San Luis Obispo. And so what you want to do is create a system that is constantly adapting. As I described in the computer example, you want a system that's constantly adapting, where one school comes up with an innovative approach or tries an experiment that succeeds, the other schools will try to apply it to their set of requirements. And I think the Education 2000 kind of fails in the sense if it believes that it's going to invent schools but only invent a different recipe. That's what I think is fundamentally wrong. You need a living, reactive, innovative kind of system to deal with education. And that comes through competition.
David Summerall, Mr. Alibrando, thank you very much for stimulating speech. Would you please respond to some classic liberal attacks on educational choice, such as the following, that under the system you propose, it will mean that taxpayers' dollars will flow to schools that may be formed along ethnic or religious lines, and that as well, because schools in a competitive system will be trying to sell academic excellence, you will therefore get a brain drain from the public system to the independent system, and you'll be left with the intellectual dregs in the public system.
Sure. You know, there are obviously a lot of contradictions in those kinds of, and I know those are not your questions.
Definitely.
But there are a lot of contradictions. You have to ask yourself, if you give parents a choice so that their kids can go to a private school, then you have to ask yourself, really, does that mean that the public schools can't provide an adequate education? That they can't provide for twice the amount of money an education comparable to what kids can receive in a private school? You know, There is a feeling out there that we as taxpayers are committed to preserving some educational system, some bureaucratic system. That's not what we're paying our taxes for. We're paying our taxes to educate our kids. And so if our kids get a better education at half the cost or less than the cost in public schools by going to some other private school, that better fulfills our obligation at lower cost to the taxpayers than operating through the system. So, you know, they have a real problem when they talk about the fact that you'll get a brain drain and the good kids will leave the public schools and so forth. Hopefully, the message they ought to be getting is, why is it that those schools, private schools, parochial schools, and others, appear to do a better job, and parents feel they do a better job than we do. Maybe we've got to get our act together and keep kids in our schools not under the force of law, but because their parents want them to be there. Mm-hmm. That, I think, is the essential answer. You know, it was amazing to me at a debate that I had just recently. I was asked the question, how do I feel about the condom issue? And I said, that's not important. How I feel is not important. What is important is that every parent who has the responsibility for raising their children ought to have some say about whether they want their kids to go to a school that engages in passing out condoms. And so the issue is not really one of what is right or wrong. The issue is that parents should have the opportunity to make that decision, not some bureaucracy and forcing it down on parents.
A second quick question, and I'm not familiar with the initiative, but I'd be interested in how it addresses this problem. In British Columbia and Canada, they have an existing system, a voucher system, without the vouchers. Mm-hmm. Independent schools can receive up to 50% of the per pupil subsidy that state schools do. The problem is that the educational bureaucracy in the government still dictates what the curriculum is. Mm-hmm. Now, what will happen under this choice system, you still leave the state in charge of the curriculum and the standards and all the rest of it.
No. Ours is very, very different than Canada. That is the reason that our voucher or scholarship goes to the parent. And then the parent can use that just as a parent who's wealthy enough today can decide where their children go to school. So it's not a government subsidy of any school. It's returning that decision-making power to the parent, and the parent can use it in any way they like.
One more question.
One more.
Could you give us some sense about the politics of this initiative? Where are you going for support? Are you getting it from homeschoolers? Is the Catholic Church weighing in on behalf of parochial schools? Where is the Chamber of Commerce, NFIB? Are you getting support from Oriental parents? How does the politics break down? I can understand where the opposition comes from. Where are you going for support?
The support is largely coming from people who really believe in the issue, as I'm sure many of you in this room do. From the business community, we're getting a large amount of support from what I would call the entrepreneurial companies. The companies that, obviously, those that sell to the education bureaucracy or to the education community are very reluctant to make contributions. Those who are highly regulated, utilities and so forth, for a lot of obvious reasons, are reluctant. But there is a real tidal wave moving in the direction of more and more, even of some of the utility-type companies supporting the initiative. And I'm hopeful that by next week we will have qualified. We need 920,000 signatures, and I expect we'll have them by next week so that we'll qualify. And once we're qualified, I think a lot more people will be coming forward to support us. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joe. Once again, please remember to register. Please remember tomorrow's meeting at 8:30. And now, Jameson, announcement from Jameson campaign.
We have a new old tradition. Our traditional Friday night soiree, also known as the bar that stays open until dawn. Usually, the last man standing was the late Burton Gray, the great stalwart of the Philadelphia Society. The bar will open perhaps in 15 minutes in room 827, and you're all welcome. And we will also pass the hat to subsidize this event, since the Philadelphia Society is not an official sponsor of the Burton Gray Memorial All-Night Bar.
Thank you, and good night.